Well, good morning and welcome to our meeting. It's 9 a.m. on June 3rd, 2025, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County TUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Tony Olson, our Vice President, Colin John Harlow, our CEO, Colin Willenbrock, our Chief Legal Officer, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, Commissioner Julieta Alfarana Crosby, our Secretary, is absent today. Please mute or turn off your cell phone or other electronic devices at this time. So I'm going to begin with a flag salute. You may join me if you'd like.
One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Copies of the agenda are located in the deputy clerk's table. We're in the conference. Commissioner, are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the public agenda?
I have none.
Okay. Comments from the public is item two on today's agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments from or items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes, and person shall be recognized to speak from sign up cards located at the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. Joining by Zoom, click raise hand or dial *9 if by phone, and I will call you to speak at the appropriate time. When you're called on and on a phone, please dial *6 to unmute. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state and spell your name, and indicate where you're from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners and the audience. If you have documents or the material entered into the record, please hand them to the deputy clerk who will distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with our procedures. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So our first item is item one, recognitions declarations. Our employee of the month for June, Jessica Martin. And I'll introduce Aaron Ricci to
Yes.
Sorry, Aaron. We will introduce Jessica Martin.
It's Aaron Ricciuti. Thank you. It's never.
I said it correctly. I might. Sorry.
Hi, I'm one of three accounting managers and have had the honor and joy of being Jessica's manager for nearly 2 years. Jessica began her career at the district working in customer accounting over 17 years ago, and was then hired in accounts payable in 2012. She's held a number of titles, such as specialist, technician, and currently an accounts payable office coordinator. For some additional background, we have a small yet mighty AP team of three staff, two office coordinators, and one accountant. Between the two coordinators, they process about 24,000 invoices and set up anywhere from 200 to 300 new vendors per year. In 2024, we paid nearly 1,500 unique vendors. Additionally, they are responsible for quite a bit of coordination and communication with internal staff and vendors to dot I's, cross T's. I lost my spot. to make sure that all the invoices and the vendor forms are ready for processing. It's a good day when the AP inbox receives 100 emails. And of those emails received, AP typically receives anywhere from 3 to 8 phishing emails that they have to vet to make sure we're not paying fake invoices or vendors. On top of all of this, they're also responsible for IRS compliance, 1099 filing, statement reconciliation, and so much more. Now that you've heard all the numbers, imagine all this work falling to Jessica. One may ask, how on earth could one person do all of that work? And Jessica would agree that it has not been easy. And this unfortunately has not been the first time that she's had to cover for a vacancy during her time in the district. But we do hope it's her last. Jessica is extremely dedicated to her work and always wants to put forth her best work product. And it's really in her nature. As senior manager, controller, and auditor, Sean Hunstock said, Jessica is one of the hardest working employees he's known in almost 30 years of working at public entities. For a little over a year, Jessica has been a one-person show. coordinating everything invoice and vendor related, track of where everything's at, all while not letting anything fall through the cracks. And somehow she's maintained a positive attitude. For example, during last year's storm season, she may not have been working out in the storm on the front lines and the elements, but she was paying our mutual aid crews, tree trimming crews, materials invoices to replenish warehouse inventory levels, and much more. She's an unsung hero behind the scenes, keeping everything together, and has grown into the go-to person for anything AP related for so many around the district. As current coworker Cressa Johnson said, Jessica's superpowers include training others with patience. Former manager Nathan Gibson shared that Jessica has been the epitome of reliability, dedication, and perseverance at the district, and he truly believes our success as timely payer is predicated on Jessica's pride in her work. Every day, Jessica works tirelessly at her craft, and while many worry AI is coming to take their jobs, he believes AI is more worried that Jessica is coming to take it. During this brief time leading accounts payable, he always looked forward to their daily check-ins. Jessica brought a lighthearted, positive energy, even when the team faced tough challenges. He can't think of a more deserving contributor of the PUD for this honor. Here's to your continued success, Kirby D. Jessica.
Wear your socks.
While celebrating Jessica's remarkable accomplishments at work, it's important to acknowledge the extraordinary dedication she demonstrated. Regularly working weekends and often putting in 10 to 12-hour days during the week to complete this body of work. On top of this, Jessica has a wee bit of a bad habit about taking her laptop on vacation and sneaking in some work. With the increased hours, the AP team tried many tactics to encourage her not to bring her laptop. So much so that one trip, she tried to log on and wasn't able to access the network. We had a network-wide outage that morning, but she didn't know it at the time. When she returned from vacation, she thought I had called the help desk and had them temporarily. AP can feel like a thankless job at times. Jessica's at the center of ensuring we stay in compliance with our AP policies, maintain a positive reputation within the community by paying vendors on time. She's a critical member of the team, and honestly, not sure what we'd do without her. And while Jessica is truly a work hero, behind the numbers is an amazing person. Jessica is one of the most kind, caring, passionate, and fun people I know. She has a huge heart, particularly when it comes to animals. She grew up riding horses and was quite the competitor. She has rescued multiple dogs that have gotten loose and reunited them with their owners, and I'm pretty sure she would adopt an entire cat shelter if she could. Jessica and her husband Shane have three very loved cats and have adopted the stray cat that started coming around their house. This stray cat has a house and a warming pad outside. So if anyone was curious as to why this cat chose Jessica, that'd be why. In addition to animals, Jessica loves to garden, and neighbors rave about the beautiful flowers she grows. She can crochet without looking at her hands and can even multitask and watch TV, all while following a pattern. During the summer, former coworker Andrea Duffy said it best. If she could, she'd work from a paddleboard on Lake Stevens. Luckily, we have recently filled the open position just in time for summer. I hope Jessica and Shane can enjoy more time on the lake this summer and are able to plan exciting new travel adventures in the future. Please join me in thanking Jessica for her continued dedication and congratulating her on such a deserving accomplishment. And for anyone that is able to stay, we have light refreshments over in the deli. If you'd like to join us.
Right, you have
to.
You'll take your laptop on your paddleboard, dude. Well, thank you for all you do. The amount of work you do is phenomenal, but you know, the fact that we always have clean audits, AP is a source of fraud. It's also haranguing lots of other people in the room too. Is this invoice accurate? So it's a tremendous amount of work. And I appreciate that you're on it. And I'm glad you're getting some relief. And I think the cat picked you not because of the heating pad. I think cats know cat people. I have cats, so I like them.
I don't, but that's all. Kitties? Okay, I've got a couple things to say to you.
Okay.
Really good write up there. You covered most of it, but some things based on my years of experience that really popped out at me, and there's so many that I've got to read it here.
Okay.
Ethics. And coupled with being very compassionate, supports her team, good multitasker, and focused on your work, positive attitude, fun, even in the situation you have been in with working 24/7. And a focus on problem solving. And she said in the write-up, you know, I've gone from no experience to feeling confident in my ability to bring value to my team. How about that for being humble? So, so important. Old Tony's ears really perked up when I saw this combination of characteristics because they're going to take you far, dear. They're really going to take you far in your career. And don't limit yourself to the possibilities for you in the future. I sincerely mean that. Congratulations.
I assume you have a trophy case. Trophy case. And then we have $50. I don't know if they have PUD swimwear, but I can't imagine.
Picture. I always get the picture. Isn't this not great?
Oh. I should have brought the cat.
I was going to say.
Yes.
I was surprised when I opened it. Where's the kitty? Go. Why don't I set them back here just temporarily? Because you got to put up with me.
So, do you have anyone here, family you'd like to introduce?
It's here.
Okay.
It's Shane.
Hi.
Yep.
She has to be up here. You have to be up here. That's the message I just got.
Let's do one together.
Basketball player too.
And, okay.
Yeah. Let's just do one with just a couple.
Let's do that.
They're a great pair.
Congratulations. Thank you for all you do. Well, it's open mic. If you'd want to say any words, this is your opportunity.
Were they going to do pictures out on the stairs or something?
You're all welcome to stay, but I can't.
It's a real yawner.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Maybe I'll see you on the lake. The only other person I know who can tell me that is my 10-year-old. I'm a little jealous right now.
So it's not a cat.
Blurted that. I apologize to all the cat lovers.
Yeah,
thank you.
All right, next on our agenda is comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not on today's agenda? Please state your first and last name for the record. I'm not seeing any hands raised in the room. I'm not seeing any hands online. Okay, we will move to the consent agenda, item 3. 3A, approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of May 13th, 2025, and the special meeting of May 17th, 2025. 3B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. And 3C, consideration of certification slash ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Please raise your hand. Comments? Seeing online. Commissioner, do you have any questions or comments?
No, I like the competition on the ADMS system solution.
I need to check here real quick. I had.
And you've negotiated a no greater than 5% per year escalation, which in this environment, that's good. I have nothing to comment.
Okay, I think I do, but I'm trying to understand my question now. Oh, I know. So this is on the BDMS solution data. The estimate is 25 million. And the award is about 1.5 million. Yes, I'm trying to understand.
Morning, commissioners. Kevin Labering, program director for SnowSmart. So the 25 million is the original estimate for the overall ADMS solution, which included the corporate historian. We've broken that project out, and so 25 million. When we met last December for the ADMS solution award for TRC, which ended up being about $11 million, that same number of 25 million was on there. So that was the corporate historian is just a very small part of the original estimate. And then the TRC contract for ADMS came in a lot under, quite a bit under that 25 million. So this is just still tied to that original estimate of all that software bundled together.
Got it. Thank you. Any follow up questions?
No, I haven't. That's a good question.
I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Next, item 4, our CEO General Manager's briefing and study session. This item is for the board and CEO General Manager to discuss issues among ourselves with PUD staff. CEO John Harlow will facilitate. Good morning, John.
Good morning, commissioners. First up is an update on our community engagement and Kelly Stickney. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, John. I'm Kelly Stickney, Lead Communications Specialist, here to give you a brief update on our community engagement thus far this year and a little bit of a preview of what to expect this summer. So these are the events that we participated in from January to June this year, and the numbers following those events are the number of people we estimate that we interacted with during each of them. From the most recent event, going backwards, we had our hydropower appreciation event just a few weeks ago. You all were in attendance, so I don't need to tell you how wet and rainy that event was. But a great opportunity for our customers to see how hydropower works from precipitation to the powerhouse. It was our most well-attended hydropower appreciation day yet, with 174 people that visited. Yeah, even despite the rain. So great success, great partnership with our natural resources and generations team. We also attended in the month of May the Riverside and Northwest Neighborhood Association meetings here in Everett. We were there to talk about the Everett to Delta transmission line. There were approximately 50 people at both those meetings. Great questions from the public and a lot of interest in the potential of beautifying some of those poles down Broadway. We also had two open houses for the Everett to Delta transmission line with about 25 attendees. Again, good questions, great interest in beautification, and we'll be continuing that campaign this summer, digging deeper on one of those options with the public after we meet with the city of Everett later this month. Of course, in April, we had our energy block party. We estimate upwards of 5,000 people in attendance, another great event. We just love the opportunity to interact with our customers and talk with them about all the great things we do here at the PUD. Earlier, we had our Crosswind pilot meeting in Arlington. That was a stakeholder meeting to talk about the Crosswind transmission line. Greg Ruiz and I attended the Kiwanis Luncheon in Snohomish, which was a very fun event, talking to that group about all things going on at the PUD, and specifically Greg got to share his experience doing mutual aid in Guam, which was something the group was very interested in. We also attended the Snow Goose and Birding Festival, the Mariner Future Fest. Of course, the North County Grand Opening was a great success and a great way to celebrate the tremendous work that went into creating that building by our facilities teams and others. The Tulalip Resource Fair we attended, and then the tree, we did a tree power presentation to the League of Women Voters here in Snohomish County. And then, of course, our Arbor Day celebration with the City of Everett, which was always a tremendously fun event and also involved the Boys and Girls Club. Our education program is wrapping up one of their final field trips of the year today out at Woods Creek. We've had 14 Woods Creek field trips, and one was canceled last October due to weather. That was our homeschool field trip. We've rescheduled that for next year. Over 1,200 students plus teachers and chaperones have attended. It's just such an amazing program and opportunity to learn about hydropower, different jobs at the PUD, as well as to get students out in nature. So great work by Heather Herbst and Kelly Singletary on that. We've also done field trips to our microgrid with the Everett Community College. We're working with our emerging technologies team. And we had our a tour of our operations with the Edmond School District Work Experience Program. This is our first tour with a special education class. It was really a tremendous experience, and really want to thank Paul Kiss for helping coordinate that with along with Kelly Singletary. We've had 11 STEM nights and then 12 other various educational opportunities in the community. This has been a busy, busy education group this spring. And then we're really happy to announce that we're growing our high school internship program, working with Casey Dahlbeck and Paul Kiss, as well as legal and our HR teams to finalize some of those details going into that. But as of now, we have two students from the Arlington School District, which will be interning with our line crews, and four from the Everett School District, which will be two with our line crews and two with IT. So it's great to get the IT group involved this year, too. Great. And then this summer, so it's going to be another exciting summer. This year, we're shifting our approach to really be going into these events with a strategic purpose and a focus. We'll be starting with attending Everett Pride on June 21st. We'll be bringing information to that event that helps to reach income qualified customers, as well as information about energy efficiency. It's the first event of this kind that we've attended as a PUD. Later this summer, we'll be attending two Sunday markets in Granite Falls. This area was chosen because of our focus on the public safety power shutoff program and signing people up and educating them about that program. We'll, of course, be at Aquafest with our amazing water utility, talking to customers about all things water. We'll be in the Salt and Shindig Parade, which will be handing out flyers, again, promoting public safety power shutoff for our customers, making sure this area is aware of that, too. That will also be our focus at the Darrington Bluegrass Festival, which this will be the first time we attend that event. We're very excited to get out and talk to our customers out in Darrington.
Yeah.
We're very excited about that. We'll be at the Stanwood Camino Fair Parade. We'll talk a little bit about PSPS out there as well, but we'll also be promoting the ribbon cutting for the new North Camino substation, which I'll speak to a little bit later, but it's a very wonderful culmination of a lot of investments we've made in that area over the last few years. For National Night Out, we'll be attending three events. We'll be attending National Nights Out in Monroe, Gold Bar, and with Snohomish County at Willis Tucker Park. So it'll be a lot of, again, talk about wildfire mitigation and PSPS, and it'll be great to go get out in those communities. Of course, it wouldn't be summer without us being at the fair. So we'll be at the fair once again this year. And then summer will wrap itself up with the fair on 44th in Linwood to make sure that we get some time with our South County customers as well. And those are our plans for the summer. Love to have you all join us whenever it's appropriate and you're available. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Is the 44th in Linwood a new one?
That's an event they've done actually for quite a few years.
Okay,
it's well attended, really fun.
Okay. Just a comment on the pics. Go back to slide 2, Commissioner. And look at the one on the far right. You and Juliana, great picture.
Oh, you're looking not at least, but oh, that one.
That one. That's really great because usually commissioners are standing there. And you guys are having fun.
We were because there was big scissors and there were small scissors. Big scissors are meant to be looked at. So
you proved
she had the big scissors, and I told her before I have the backup. That's what we're
anyway. I just
I'm curious the picture on the left. I'm curious how much those squirrel suits weigh after that torrential downpour.
Well, and I think I sent you a follow-up to that, you know, great work, but hope the PB had a large hair dryer. Those four things were so
I just want to say these numbers are really impressive. I mean, you know, Mr. Keeler, and I think we have one or two customers online. We don't get a lot of customers for our meetings, but it's just phenomenal. Some of these are PUD-only events, and these are impressive numbers. Yeah, nice work. And in addition to that. So you've got cowboy boots. I think some of those events, you're going to need cowboy boots.
I'm from Eastern Oregon. I have multiple hair. Okay.
I need
And I just want to ask, since we're talking about CommShop, is that Aaron's Sweeney prepared a PowerPoint and speaking points for me the other day that I delivered to the Arlington Rotary Club about the new office, and really it was a great presentation. So thank you, Aaron. I felt very prepared.
Yeah.
And they don't ask easy questions.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Kelly. Great job. And again, huge kudos to everybody that's involved in pulling all those events off. Next on the agenda was the BNSF Deer Creek Flats radio lease. We're going to hold on that. The team is still working with BNSF to try to get that contract.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Yes. So that'll be coming back to you as soon as we can get that across the finish line and finalized. And then next up is our 2025 financing update in Lauren Lake. Oh, wait a minute. I'm ahead of myself. Yep. I am so sorry, Ryan.
No worries, it'll be very fast.
Kind of a wrap on the state legislative affairs, and then we'll have Jenna Beth give us a little bit of an update on the federal side.
Good morning, commissioners. I'll be very fast. For the record, there's not a ton to update, which is great. For the record, I'm Ryan Collins, the District State Government Relations and External Affairs Specialist 3, and I'm here to provide a very quick update on kind of the final actions of the legislative session. I don't have any presentation for you guys, just verbal comments. Since my last report, Governor Ferguson completed his duty to consider legislation from the 2025 session, signing into law our remaining key legislation, which included amending the Clean Fuels Program, as well as our safe excavation practices, and then also signed into law the biannual budgets, which include the operating, capital, and transportation budgets. As I previously detailed, before concluding the 2025 legislative session, the legislature approved these budgets, resulting in an overall spending increase of $8 billion over the 23-25 biennium. With his signature, the governor approved the top-line spending passed by the legislature with minor changes via partial vetoes. As I've reported previously, due to the increased spending levels of the budget, the legislature also advanced several new revenue proposals, including an adjustment to the B&O, or business and occupation tax, a new excise tax on select professional services, the repeal of certain tax preferences, and an increase in the gas tax included in the transportation budget. The governor signed all of these into law alongside the budget, stating that they were necessary to ensure the state's financial stability and balance the state's budget over the biennium. With those all signed into law, there is no longer any expectation of a special session this year. We are currently in the process of further analyzing exactly what's in the budget and some of what the new revenue proposals will do to the district, and we'll provide updates as that information is more available. With that, I can definitively close the books on the 2025 session.
Thank you.
And with that, if there's no questions, I'll kick it over to Jenna, but happy to answer any if you might have them.
No.
Another session down. All right, perfect. And then with that, I'll kick it over to Jenna.
Thanks, Ryan. Good morning, everyone. I'm Jenna Peth, the district's federal affairs specialist. And today I wanted to provide a few quick updates, including on trade and tariff policies. So as many of you may have seen, last week, two separate federal courts issued decisions finding that major components of the Trump administration's tariff regime are unlawful. These rulings apply to the 10% worldwide tariffs, which are often referred to as the reciprocal or Liberation Day tariffs, as well as retaliatory tariffs on China and the drug trafficking related tariffs that were imposed on imports from China, Mexico, and Canada. And that is just on imports that fall outside of existing trade agreements. Both rulings have been stayed pending appeal for 2 weeks from last Thursday, which means the tariffs remain in effect while the legal process continues. It's very possible that these cases could ultimately reach the Supreme Court. While we've taken steps to manage our risk exposure through supplier coordination and contract review, the tariffs have contributed to cost pressures across the utility supply chain, and we're continuing to monitor the situation closely as policies continue to evolve. President Trump and his team have been vocal in pushing back on these court decisions. The administration has already filed appeals and is considering other legal options to maintain the tariffs, including a potential action under Section 301 of the Trade Act. That's a different legal pathway used in the past to impose tariffs in response to unfair trade practices. Meanwhile, Congress is beginning to reassert itself. There's been some interest in bipartisan legislation that would require the president to get congressional approval for tariffs that stay in place longer than 60 days. It is unclear what the short-term pathway is for this legislation, but Congress will undoubtedly continue this discussion throughout the summer and into the fall. In terms of what we're tracking moving forward, in the short term, nothing really changes. The tariffs are still being enforced and legal appeals are underway. By midsummer, some tariffs are scheduled to increase or expire, depending on the outcome of trade negotiations with countries like China. For example, the next round of tariff increases is currently set for July 9th. And then over the long term, the outcome of these court cases or potential new legislation could reshape how tariffs are applied to essential infrastructure materials in particular. We're going to continue to monitor this closely, especially for any updates that could affect pricing or availability of the equipment we rely on. And second, I wanted to touch on a topic folks have likely seen in the news, the House Republicans' tax, otherwise known as reconciliation legislation. That bill is now up for Senate consideration, where they are expected to make some changes to what the House passed. We are tracking and actively engaging on a variety of issues in this process, including energy tax credits and municipal finance policies. I will continue to provide updates as the package progresses over the next month, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
No. So I'm curious about the PMAs and Trump's budget and the House version. Have they been left alone in that? There's often a I'll move to sell the PMAs.
Happy to touch on that. We're still waiting for some further budget details. So far, we haven't seen explicit language regarding sale of PMA assets, but what we have seen is some concerning reduction in budgets in the Trump administration's proposed budgets for other PMAs. So WAPA, for example, there's a proposed 33% cut to their budget for fiscal year 2026. So that's certainly something we're watching closely for the overall environment of funding for PMAs.
Bonneville, we pay for that. So the one cut money, they're cutting money out of our customers' pockets, is that?
Yeah, I think the
funding. They're adding to our customers' pockets.
There's a little bit of a difference in the funding model between WAPA.
Oh, that was my underlying question.
Yeah, and BPA is, and that's customer, our customer and retail customer funded by and large.
Thank you.
Just to clarify, we're primarily tracking the WAPA reductions just in the sense that it sort of illustrates the perspective that the administration has on the PMAs more broadly.
Well, and what about federal grants? Utilities having challenges collecting on grant reimbursements or we heard anything? The energy grants.
Mm-hmm.
So, happy to answer that. So, in respect to the GRIP grant specifically, so what the SnowSmart grant falls under, we have not seen specific issues with reimbursement, but we have seen additional data requests and other requirements from the Department of Energy, both for the GRIP grants as well as other programs throughout the department.
And did that answer your question or any other information, Jenna, on the status of the FEMA or FEMA?
Happy to provide an update there too. So we have not heard any news related to the denial of the disaster declaration for the state of Washington. Technically, FEMA still has some time to review that and submit its response back to the governor's office, but that's something we're continuing to track. At a more macro level, we are seeing the administration get more specific on what disaster declarations they plan to grant and which they do not. And essentially that involves raising the level of damage that has to occur before the federal government steps in. And that's consistent with their overall approach of directing more responsibility to state and local emergency management entities and directing it away from the responsibility of the federal government. We are working on some legislative policies that could potentially address some of the FEMA challenges and provide more certainty in the long term for smaller disasters that might fall outside of what the Trump administration views as eligible for FEMA. And that's certainly something I can keep you all updated on.
Thank you.
And to Jenna's comments on the GRIP grant, we have received additional data requests from DOE, and we're working through that and running those processes.
And we're still receiving reimbursements?
The status right now is just additional data requests. We're not sure the exact intent of that, but they're going back and asking or re-asking some of the same things that they had asked on the application process. All right.
Thing is free money. Thank you, Jenna.
It's free.
No such thing as free money.
Oh, no such thing.
A lot of free.
Excellent. Thank you, Jenna and Ryan. Okay, now we are ready for the financing update and Lauren Way. Morning, Lauren. And Angela Johnson.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
In the vein of no such thing as free money, here today to talk about our financing endeavors. So Lauren Way, Manager of Treasury and Financial Risk. So quick agenda for this morning. I'm going to give an update on the market, sort of what we're seeing out there in terms of interest rates, and then the various components of our proposed transaction this year. So a little bit more complex than some of the simple new money transactions that we've had in the last several years. So a few components that we're considering this year, of course, the 2025 new money transaction, which is going to be serving as the anchor for the other two potential refunding opportunities. So we have the 2015 electric and generation system revenue bonds that are eligible for refunding. And then the 2010 AB Electric and Generation System Build America Bonds, or BABs. We'll chat through the financing timeline and next steps. And then in terms of expectations for the board today, no action. We historically have come to the board just once ahead of document approval requests. But this year, given some of the uncertainty in the market and some of the complexity around the transactions that we're proposing, we thought it might be helpful to come a couple times ahead of the document approval requests.
So thank you very much.
Absolutely. So we'll be back here in a couple of weeks with an additional market update and some more conversation around debt service structuring and timing. And then document approval requests are currently scheduled for July 1st. So jumping into the market update, it has been a remarkable couple of months in the market as a whole, and you know, as we're talking about here today, the municipal market. With the announcement of tariffs in April, we saw some of the largest movements in the municipal market that we've seen in the last 25 years. And heightened uncertainty around U.S. trade policy has really left rates higher and expected to kind of continue while we have that uncertainty. So there in the top right graph, we have the 30-year municipal rates compared to 30-year treasury rates from the beginning of the year to May 19th of this year. And really in that April 9th timeline, when the tariffs were announced, you can see that significant spike in rates. We did see them come off a little bit, come down after that, but again, remaining a bit higher due to that uncertainty around trade policy. During that time period, there was a little bit of challenge in the market because of all of that uncertainty and volatility for issuers to get their deals done. But since that time, we've seen a lot more stability in the market, and there hasn't been any issue with issuers getting their deals done since then. And as there becomes more certainty, some of the impacts of tariffs are filtered into economic data. We expect that stability to continue. Historically, the district has gone out to issue in the summer timeframe, which is historically a really good time to issue bonds. There tends to be a higher inflow of funds into the market. Investors have redemptions and coupons that they're ready to reinvest. And so we're targeting the issuance in the late summer to leverage that advantage in the market and expect the market will be well positioned to absorb those dollars.
So looking at that graph, I don't know what the difference is normal between the, so this is 30-year treasury rate versus, so it looks like there's about a, at the start of the year, there's about a 20% discount. And at the end of the year, it's about a 10% discount. And one's taxable, one's not, right?
Correct.
So what's normal? If there is a normal?
I'm not sure that there is a true normal. It varies, you know, depending on a variety of things. But it's really great that you point that out. So the difference between those, we explain that through the treasury to municipal ratio. So ratios, we typically say that investors are agnostic to purchasing a treasury or a municipal when the ratio is between 80 to 85%. Because the US Treasury interest is, of course, taxable. And so if we think about an investor's tax rate, around, you know, potentially 15-20%, that would, after tax, would be a comparable rate to the municipal rate. You can see after around April, with the announcement of tariffs, that ratio has increased. And so now we're seeing ratios around 90, and we actually saw the ratio go over 100% at one point, meaning that municipals were offering interest rates higher than treasuries. And that's, while interest rates are higher, there's kind of a positive spin there in that, from an investor's perspective, municipals offer relative value to treasuries because they're getting more money from a pre-tax perspective compared to the after-tax treasury. And so what that, you know, positive spin there is that increased demand in the municipal market, which can help to then potentially push rates back down a little bit. So going into the market at the summertime, in addition to those higher ratios that we're seeing, should help with the demand in the market for when we go to
show. For municipals.
Yes.
So it's not necessarily, it's not necessarily a concern of risk with municipals.
Say that again.
It's not really, I'm just trying to understand this. I don't know why they're not always.
The phenomenon.
Yeah, track about it. So is there a perceived risk now with municipals that there wasn't before? Is that why they're going at a higher percentage? Or is it just an aberration of demand and supply?
It really is just related to supply and demand. I know, you know, during that time, during that April timeframe, we saw a big outflow from the market because there was so much volatility that a lot of investors resorted to putting their money in cash or needing to pull money out of some of these fixed income investments to meet their liquidity obligations. And so, you know, when that happens, then demand, of course, goes down, which requires rates to come up. So mostly just a component of supply and demand.
No, but it's still, there's still risk in for us in terms of a successful sale.
I would say the risk is pretty low. For us, you know, the district has a really strong credit, and we're, you know, a green renewable energy portfolio, which investors find attractive. And again, we're going to issue in the summer months. And while, you know, the size of the issuance that we have is large for the district, it isn't really that large for the municipal bond market. And so we don't feel like there are any significant challenges in getting the deal done this summer. The last point that I want to make here on this slide is related to that graph in the bottom right. Current rates today, and these are as of May 16th, compared to historical averages back to 1981. The dark blue bars on that graph represent the historical range between that time period. And then the lighter green dashes there represent the historical average, and the darker green represent the current rates. And the point that I want to make here is, you know, we've gone to market with 5 bond issuances over the last 6 years. And during that time period, we've been a little bit spoiled with market rates at that time being so incredibly low compared to historical averages. And, you know, this year going to market, we are seeing higher rates. However, they're still coming in below those historical averages.
So is that bar accurate? They actually go to almost zero?
Yes. Wow. We issued in 2020.
Wow.
Our rate is incredibly low, not below 1%.
We have a party.
Very good.
I must not have been invited.
I remember we were earning about 7 basis points or 0.07% on our investments in the LGIP at that time. That's when the rates were cut down to zero.
Wow.
Very, very low.
Absolutely.
All right. Moving on to the reason that we were going into the bond market this year. So our 2025 new money transaction. So the 2025 budget anticipated a bond issuance this year to bring in a $185 million project fund to finance eligible capital projects. For context, our capital forecast for 2025 to 2027, which is the period of time that we'll be primarily spending those dollars down toward capital, is about $667 million. And about $221 million of that is contained within the 2025 budget. So, as I mentioned, planning to go to market later this summer with this issuance. Regular old tax-exempt fixed rate 30-year life bonds, which is the standard for the district's electric system issuances.
So are these callable?
Yep. So with a tax-exempt municipal bonds, they come with a standard 10-year par call. And then last point here is we're still working with our underwriters and financial advisors to determine the structure of debt service for this transaction. As we'll talk about here in a moment, we have a couple of refunding opportunities. So kind of looking at the district's debt service as a whole when considering these refunding opportunities, as well as our short and long-term financial goals. So our next update here in a couple of weeks will focus more on structure. All right, so our first refunding opportunity here, the 2015 electric and generation system revenue bonds. So these were originally new money bonds back in 2015. We used them to finance general capital of the electric system. And then on the generation side, they were used to finance the Hancock and Callaghan projects. These bonds feature a 10-year par call, which is standard for tax-exempt bonds. And so they will be callable for optional redemption as of December 1st of this year. Tax-exempt bond regulations require or do not allow us to close that transaction any earlier than September 1st of 2025. So a little bit of nuance there in terms of when we can price and close that bond deal. And so what does that mean for you? The supplemental resolution that we'll be bringing later on here in a few weeks will have some language in it that authorizes us to issue bonds, price and close bonds on potentially one or more dates, which will give us the flexibility to price and settle the new money bonds at an earlier date. And then price and settle the refunding bonds potentially later to ensure that we're within that that required September 1st close date. So looking at savings estimates here, the table on the right, these are rates as of May 19th. As you can imagine, things have changed since we pulled together these slides. And rates have moved away from us a little bit. So current savings estimates with numbers as of June 2nd, we have an $11 million combined net present value savings at rates as of yesterday. And that's in the current rate column. And then under the shock analysis, where if rates go up by half a percent or down by half a percent, if rates move up by half a percent, we're still seeing savings of around $4.5 million or around 3% for the combined systems. Any questions here before I move on? It's pretty straightforward.
It's straightforward as you're going to So I was going to straight it makes sense.
With that, then getting into the 2010 AB Electric and Generation Systems Build America Bonds or the BABs. So a little bit of background on the BABs. These bonds were introduced following the 2008 financial crisis as a way to stimulate the economy. They are technically taxable bonds, so the interest on them is taxable to investors. However, the federal government offered at the time a 35% subsidy on the interest payments to issuers to reduce the overall cost and, of course, incentivize issuers to issue these bonds. Pivot for a second and talk about the federal government budget process. So the federal government has the budget rule, pay as you go or pay go, which requires that any increase in spending is offset by a reduction in cost or increased revenue somewhere else. To the extent that that doesn't occur, sequestration is automatically kicked in. It's across the board cuts to projects or programs, which the Build America bonds are subject to. So since 2013, the 35% subsidy has been sequestered by an average of 6.4%. So it's been reduced by 6.4% since 2013. And currently it's sequestered at 5.7%. This has come at a cost of about $2.2 million to date for the district.
I'm sorry, I don't follow. So say we sold $1 million of these bonds. We're responsible for the interest of the bonds?
So we pay interest on the bonds, just like we pay interest on any of our other bonds, right? They are at a taxable rate, so a higher rate than a tax-exempt bond issuance would have been at that time, which wouldn't have been economical for us, right?
Right, but the tax isn't on the buyer of the bond?
The tax is on the buyer of the bond. Okay. So the buyer of the bond pays tax on that. So it's at a higher interest rate. And that wouldn't be advantageous for us. So the federal government said, we'll offer a subsidy. We'll pay you directly 35% of your interest payment every 6 months. So in Treasury, we file a tax form every 6 months to the IRS and get a return of 35%, although now it's reduced by the sequestration. So it originally was supposed to be that 35%, and then beginning in 2013, that 35% began being reduced. And so we're not getting as much from that subsidy that we anticipated when we issued these bonds.
Fascinating.
So circling back to the sequestration risk, you know, as we have talked about and as we have heard, the current administration's one big beautiful bill has significant increased spending and has extended the tax cuts, which is expected to significantly increase the federal deficit. Because of that, we're viewing the risk of additional sequestration or elimination of this subsidy has increased. Up in the top right here, we have a small table that gives a hypothetical cost to the district if the sequestration is increased to 25%. So if our 35% subsidy is reduced by 25%, would cost the district about $4.3 million over the remaining life of the bonds for over 15 years. And then if the subsidy is totally eliminated, that would cost the district about $16.7 million over the remaining life of the bonds.
And so these kinds of unknowns to the buyers, how do they handle that? I mean, there's so many unknowns, while some of them may be very slight, from a purchaser's perspective.
It's a great segue into the next portion of this conversation. It's a beautiful, wonderful question. So these bonds don't have a 10-year call like tax-exempt bonds normally do. The bonds have what's called a make-whole call, and as the name suggests, it would require that we make the investors whole upon refunding, which, as you can imagine, is not very economical for us. The bonds also have what's called an extraordinary optional redemption provision. And this language states that in the event of a tax law change, the district can redeem the bonds at more favorable rates. So it significantly increases the economics for us in refunding those bonds. There's been some uncertainty since sequestration began back in 2013 about whether sequestration constituted a tax law change. Last year, there was a court case which effectively ruled that sequestration did indeed constitute a tax law change, which would then give issuers the confidence that they needed to refund those bonds without fear of potential legal repercussion from leveraging that extraordinary optional redemption. After that court case, we saw over $15 billion of Build America bonds from issuers across the market be refunded last year. And while there was, at that time, still some potential risk of legal pushback, so many transactions have occurred so far that really that risk is effectively gone. And our external bond counsel work feels very confident in our ability to move forward. But wanted to, of course, give you all a heads up as there is possibility for there to be letters or potential comments regarding our refunding. And our very own CFO, Jeff Bishop, provided his experience when he was at Omaha Public Power, that they refunded their BABs in 2024. And they received some initial comments from investors at an investor conference. But after they decided to move forward, there weren't any complications after that. So,
sorry, go ahead. These must have been a better rate than regular municipals for us at the time.
Yes. So, if we go back to the municipal treasury ratio conversation, where normal, relative, right? But we were seeing earlier this year the ratio hovering around 20 to 25% or so, 15 to 25%. The difference would have been 35%. So it would have been even a little bit lower than what regular tax exempt municipal bonds would have been at that time. So on the right there, we have table, but again, similar rates have changed, and they have moved away from us a little bit. So we're estimating a loss on refunding these transactions of about $700,000. We've determined that a loss threshold of $1 million is acceptable to move forward with refunding these bonds to eliminate the additional sequestration risks or elimination of the subsidy. This is really a good time for us to be taking out these bonds, because we're already going to market with another issuance. If we decided to wait until the sequestration risk, until increased sequestration materialized, we would have to refund the bonds independently, which comes at a significant cost, internal resources and external service providers to hold documents together, issue the bonds, et cetera.
So 700,000 buys a certainty.
Yes, yeah, correct.
It can't get worse.
Correct.
Yeah.
And
more control. That's right. Issue.
That's right. And, we're really viewing these two refunding opportunities as combined. And the combination of the two still produces net savings for the district. So that was a lot. Any questions on this one before I move on to the next slide?
Well, since your plan is to come to us, one or two more comments.
Yes.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I'll noodle over this.
Great.
And then wait for the next presentation.
Okay. With that, tentative financing timeline. So right now we are in the thick of pulling together bond documents. So the biggest one of them is the preliminary official statement. It's, you know, a big, you guys have read it before, almost 200 page marketing document all about the district.
Sure we have.
Fantastic document. I think everyone
like we haven't got through one. That's 30 years.
Well, it's a wonderful document all about the district. When you look them on, I'm like, you should read it. That's the first thing you should
I just know that you do a bang up job. So I can look at the executive summary.
Yeah, so as you all know, it's an incredible cross-functional lift for the district to pull that document together. I want to give a big shout out to Quinn LaTorres, senior treasury analyst, who joined the district last year, and she's done a phenomenal job leading the pulling together the preliminary official statement and coordinating all of the groups that need to go in there and make updates. Also want to give a shout out to the various teams that contributed, and I wrote them down, but I'm really hoping I didn't miss anybody. So with power supply, rates, legal, customer and energy services, generation, joint use, accounting, and budget, in addition to treasury's work. So really big document. It's been a great process so far. So in addition to the preliminary official statement, we have the supplemental resolution that's in process, and then the bond purchase agreement. And all of those documents will be presented to the board of the July 1st meeting for consideration. And then, as I mentioned earlier, it's possible that we go to market on one or more dates to issue the bonds because of that sort of timing nuance where the 2015 bonds can't be closed any earlier than September 1st. We want the flexibility to potentially issue the 2025 new money bond earlier than that. So it's possible that we issue on one or more dates. The supplemental resolution, though, will include that flexibility within it. So we only expect there to be one supplemental resolution for each of the systems, the generation and the electric system. Coming up this month, we'll be meeting with rating agencies. We're going to be meeting with all three of them, Moody's, Fitch, and S&P, to secure ratings for the bond issuance. And then we'll work to finalize bond documents, price the bonds, and close the transaction. So it looks really simple up here, but a very involved process with a lot of parties.
Yeah, it's only 5 boxes.
Yeah. And a few words thrown in there.
No, I realize those bond documents are really investors who understand.
Yeah. Yep.
The risk or lack of risk. When I, you know, when I look at Washington entities and I look at cities who are capped on how much tax they can raise, right?
Yep.
And they're issuing bonds. And then you look at public utility, which we have the ability to raise revenue if needed, cover our debts. I would guess these are highly sought after.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a, you know, a big support for our credit, and something that the rating agencies focus heavily on is our rate setting time.
Yes.
With that, that's all I have for you. Any additional questions?
Just a general question. Do we hire bond counsel, or does our own legal department handle that role?
So I'm the lead for the district internally, but we do have
independent
bond counsel. We retained ORIC to do that with specialization in bond. So we've got a whole team, underwriters, and as well as our internal experts that work in tandem.
Great presentation. Very informative.
Thank you.
Great job, Lauren. And again, huge kudos to everybody that's involved with this extraordinary lift. Well, that is it for presentations this morning.
All right. Now, next is your CEO report.
Brief update on the Head Island cable. As you remember, we had a cable fault occur a couple months ago. We had low tide a couple weeks ago. Got crews out there and they were able to test. And they actually pulled the original splice apart and they found that the splice itself hadn't faulted, but near the splice back in the cable could have been due to us testing the cable at the original fault, to find the original fault or some water creeping in. when that cable was faulted, but they have identified it, made the repairs. We're just letting it soak right now under or being energized. And why don't we do some other maintenance work on Pat Island, and then we'll re-energize that shortly. So they'll be back in service for the summer.
Gosh, we're so lucky that it's right there in the final zone.
And the only other thing I was going to mention is, I think, as you know, we have the APPA National Conference coming up. Some of the events, a day of giving or day of caring, is on Friday. And then through the weekend, some board meetings, executive committee meetings, and then the conference Monday through Wednesday of next week.
Are you looking forward to becoming the new chair?
Just going to say, is that?
Yes.
What kind of celebration do they have?
I don't know. But yes, it'll be fun.
Another or this guest.
One opportunity.
Close association with the government. I mean, which helps us a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great group. They do a lot of good work for public power, and it'll be fun to be a part of that and contribute in whatever ways we can.
Well, it's impressive that you will have attained this level in so few years in public power.
They didn't get to know me well enough before they made that call.
Oh.
I don't think so. All right, any question on John's report?
No.
Okay, next, item six, items for individual consideration. 6A, consideration of a motion accepting the first quarter's 2025 financial conditions and monitoring and activities monitoring report. I'll call for a motion.
I move acceptance.
We have Sean Hunstock here to provide a presentation. Good morning, Sean.
Thank you, Commissioners. Sean Hunstock, Senior Manager, Controller, and Auditor. As you see on the screen, the last time I presented this information was on April 22nd. That was for quarter four of 2024. So this will be the first update for 2025. Just some high-level thoughts and highlights. One of the common themes will be with this presentation, again, it's for quarter one of 2025. And with these reports, we always compare that to the same period in the prior year. So one of the common themes here will be, of course, that we did not this year have the same MLK event that we did in 2024. So that kind of throws off some of the numbers. You can see quickly with purchase power went down significantly compared to the prior year. Again, that was directly related to the weather event on MLK weekend 2024. So our net income went up by $36 million through the first quarter of this year compared to the prior year. And again, almost all of that attributed to the increase in purchase power costs last year that didn't materialize, of course, for this year. excuse me. The total operating revenue was slightly lower. That's kind of a combination of a couple different things, and we'll look at these in more detail but on future slides. But our retail revenue did go up, and our wholesale revenue went down, and that too was attributed to we had more wholesale sales last quarter or last year in the first quarter than we did this year, and those sales were predicated upon that MLK event and one of the outcomes from that. So didn't have that, of course, this year, so we didn't have the wholesale deals that we did. Purchase power costs, I mentioned again, were significantly higher last year compared to this year, so the total operating expenses were down by about $38 million. And our capital expenditures increased about $4 million for the quarter compared to the prior year. And just real quickly, these are project-to-date expenditures, not necessarily just that one quarter. But so project-to-date for North County office, $53 million. Connect up AMI expenditures to date, $8.6 million. And the Camino Island substation rebuild, $8.9 million. all three of which were included in that number for capital expenditures for the first quarter of this year.
At that graph, I guess, a perfect microcosm of holding on to length and having reduced wholesale revenue in
right.
a normal year and not holding on to length and having enormous power purchases as I'm at Emerald. Just,
yeah.
It's fascinating to go back and look at the volatility.
Yeah, and that was an intentional outcome from the updates to the
right.
Energy risk management policies. A little more detail on the retail sales. We did have an increase, and you'll see that on the future slide, slide 8, an increase in the megawatt hours sold, but we also had a general rate increase as well as a BPA pass-through in the prior year that increased the retail number per customer. So an increase there, again, the wholesale revenue went down, not just in volume, but the price per megawatt went down quite a bit as well, because the price back in Q1 of 24 was quite a bit higher than what we saw in Q1 of 25. And a couple changes in the other revenue that netted to a very small change, primarily BPA revenue sources there. So some increases and decreases, but no significant change. As I mentioned before, the residential megawatt hours sold went up and the price per megawatt hour went up as well. Again, a general rate increase in April of last year is included in these numbers, part of last year as well as all of Q1 of this year. No significant change in the on the commercial side, and the wholesale revenue, again, volume went down. We just had less power to turn around and sell on the wholesale market, and quite a bit lower price that we were selling that power for. Again, that $79 average per megawatt hour in Q1 of 24 is a bit of an anomaly, again, related to us and you know, many others going out to the wholesale market before, during, and after the MLK event in January of last year. And operating expenses, again, the purchase power was down quite a bit, and O&M costs netted about $1 million increase. It's the combination of supply costs going up, some other expenses going down, but then salaries and benefits went up as well. Those are all included in the O&M expense. And we generally do, as I mentioned earlier, our retail revenue went up. And when that happens, our taxes go up too. As mentioned earlier, the changes in the B&O taxes, that's one of the things that's included in that tax number. So with the, even if the rate stays the same, if our sales go up, then our tax payment to the state through B&O taxes, as well as the municipal utility tax that we pay to the cities, those go up as well. Megawatt hours, these are billed, or excuse me, sold, excuse me, purchased. So this is power supply and cost per megawatt hour. So not a lot of changes on the block and slice side. The generation did go up for slice, which all other things being equal tends to decrease the per megawatt hour price. The market purchases, though, are the ones that change significantly here. the price, especially per megawatt hour, went down significantly between last year and this year. I mentioned earlier, I think in the Q4 2024 report, that at one point during the MLK weekend, we got close to $1,000 per megawatt hour in our costs. And that was created a large anomaly for first quarter of 2024 compared to Q1 of 25. But the volume did not change significantly, but of course the price did. Looking at some financial indicators then, we moved the debt management fund and combined that with a revenue fund late last year. So you'll see that number is zero for Q1 of 25. The project reserves have gone down quite a bit as we continue to spend down the prior bond issuances. So that number obviously will go up quite a bit later this year as we incorporate and include the new bond issuance later this year. And our senior lead debt service coverage is still really good, going up. We're quite a bit higher than the target of, I believe it's 1.75%, so quite a bit higher than that. One thing I'll mention quickly is on the bond ratings, Fitch did do a review and affirmed our existing bond rating and actually changed the outlook for that from stable to positive. So that's a good reflection on the district and our financial indicators.
Is that annual or just 1 week?
I don't know that that's...
It's okay. I just keep curious. Is that done every year?
Typically, it's done
every year.
Okay. Thank you. And again, I mentioned earlier we did have an increase in megawatt hours billed to our commercial customer, retail customers. That was about a 2.8% increase. The megawatt hours billed for wholesale went down by 5.5%. So just had fewer, less power that we needed to turn around and resell to the wholesale market. Our write-off as a percentage of sales and then just in total have both gone down. That's partly due to the $200 bill credit that occurred later in the year last year, not in Q1, but after that.
That's good work.
Yeah, great work. Average cost per megawatt hour is down quite a bit. And again, that's the impact of not needing to go out this year to the wholesale market and buy power during a large storm event. Average connections, new customer connections this quarter, Q1 of 25, are 668. So we're just under 385,000 connections at this point. Electric. We'll quickly go through the water system. Net income for Q1 is $181,000. One thing that I'll mention about that is that's primarily, if you look at all of the positives and negatives, and we'll dive into a couple of those later, but the largest one is the capital contributions, and those are primarily related to development-related activities. A significant portion of those are non-cash contributions. So when a developer puts infrastructure in the road or in a cul-de-sac, they donate through a bill of sale that infrastructure to the district, to the water system. So those are frequently non-cash contributions. We had budgeted about $1 million for capital contributions for Q1 of 25. And you see, we just had $289,000. Again, that's completely outside of the water system's outside of the control. It's really related to the development activity within the service area. So if it were not for that change in that number that is really outside of our control, the operations were actually about $400,000 to the positive compared to budget. So really good outcome for the water system on Q1 of 25. So the operating revenue then, retail sales were up. The rate, that's kind of a combination of two things, and we'll see a little more detail on that in a later slide. It's the impact of a rate increase offset by a slight change in the number of the amount or the volume of water sold to our retail customers. So the volume of water went down by about 4%, but the rate increase also took effect. So the net increase then for this quarter was $131,000 increase in retail sales. Wholesale revenue was down. We just needed to, our wholesale customers needed less water in this case. So that's primarily related to demand for the wholesale customers and slight decrease in Q1 of 25. Other revenues were primarily unchanged. And operating expenses were down. A large change in the purchased water that is primarily related to two different things that are offsetting. So we had the City of Everett cost increase that went through, but also we had greater production from district owned resources. So our wells versus buying water on the open market. So it's kind of a combination of rate increase from City of Everett offset by just needing to purchase less water for our retail and wholesale customers. And capital expenditures were decreased by $688,000. Just real quickly, the larger projects there, again, these are project to date expenses, not necessarily just this quarter. We had the Warm Beach treatment plant improvements of $2.9 million and kayak reservoir work of $1.8 million. Water system financial indicators, the project reserves are going down as the prior bond issuance. Proceeds are being spent on capital projects. Our current ratio still looks great, way above the target for that. And the debt service, that's a debt service, 3.4% again, above the target for that. And our current ratio is good as well. The volume of retail sales to customers went down, as I mentioned before, 4%. The wholesale sales volume went down by just under 20%. And the rates are reflected in this slide. And again, primarily the change there is the cost of the City of Everett purchase water costs. So that's reflected in the rates that get charged as well. Purchased water, CCF in thousands decreased as well. And again, the purchased water costs per CCF is reflective of that City of Everett cost increase. New customers, 33 during the quarter, were at just about 23,800. So the change from 105 to 33 is also reflective of a slowdown in development within the service area. That we also saw the capital contribution slow down as well during the quarter. I mentioned that earlier. Excuse me. Compared to prior year and compared to budget as well.
Yeah, we'll go back to the previous slide.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to understand, shouldn't the current ratio will be going up as we reduce our debt?
It depends. The current, the debt part of that is in the denominator of that ratio. So it's only the current portion of that debt. So if the current portion of that debt goes up, it would drive that ratio down. But also, as we're spending down, the project reserves, the current assets go down as well. So there are a lot of things that play into that number. Even the customer accounts receivable are included in the numerator of that,
okay,
that number. So one thing can be offset by a number of other things.
They're both good numbers.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And with that, are there any questions?
I have none.
I have a great presentation. Are there any comments from the public regarding the monitor report? Please raise your hand. Yeah, I see none. And no more questions from the commissioner. So I'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Next is 6B. Consideration of resolution approving amendment number 2 of the collective bargaining agreement between Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local Number 77 for the period of April 1st, 2024 through March 31st, 2028. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Christy Schmidt of the bill has entered questions regarding the resolution. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? Please raise your hand. Hands up. Commissioner, do you have any questions?
No, I don't.
Either. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Next is 6C, consideration of resolution authorizing general manager or his designee to execute a contract with the City of Seattle City Light Department for provision of third-party operating reserve services as permitted under the district's transmission contract with Bonneville Power Administration. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Ian Hunter is available to answer any questions regarding this resolution. I'll first see if there's any questions from the public regarding or comments from the public regarding the resolution. Please raise your hand. No hands up. Commissioner, do you have any questions? I know we're thoroughly educated.
We have been, yes. We've done this, so I don't have
any. We've approved it many times in the past, so. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Next is 6E, consideration of a resolution authorizing the CEO, general manager, or his designee on behalf of Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County to execute Amendment Number 1 to the 2022-2026 Power Purchase Agreement between the District and Hamlet Lumber Mills, Washington, to extend the term to September 2028. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any, Marie Morrison's been able to answer any questions about this? Are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? Please raise your hand. See any hand raised? Sure, do you have any?
No, we were briefed on May 13th on this.
We were. Okay, I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion passed unanimously. Next is 6E, consideration of a resolution declaring the purchase of substation transformers to be special market conditions for purposes of RCW 39.04.280. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Clark Langstrand is available to answer any questions regarding the resolution. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? Please raise your hand. Let's see, questions? Do you have any questions, Commissioner?
No, other than a comment that we're well aware of the issues around these recommendations to us, and I commend staff for recognizing this and being proactive rather than reactive.
I had a question, and maybe I'm just not remembering right, but I thought several years ago we had an emergency, guy had made an emergency declaration or something to suspend certain purchasing requirements to help buy more transformers. Am I just wrong? Was that about something else?
You're correct. Our blank strat contracts and purchasing. We do still have the emergency declaration in place, surprisingly, since 2021. So we're 4 years in. That's the longest emergency declaration I've ever seen. But that just testifies to the uncertainty in the supply chain. Uncertainty being the word of the day today, apparently. So, like I said, you're correct. The purpose of these two resolutions is to get away from having to make spot buys under the emergency declaration, because as Commissioner Olson says, that makes us more reactive in terms of we have a sudden need for something, it becomes an emergency, and then we're sort of at the mercy of market conditions, what we can find and what the price might be. There's no consistency or predictability in that. So this resolution and the one following are just to create a little more certainty with us for internal operations, with our customers for what we can provide for them, and then with our suppliers having a longer term contract in place, them knowing how to schedule production and be able to supply our needs in a timely manner.
One question, does this lock us in to the current bid price, or is there an escalation clause in it?
We typically have an escalation clause in the contract like this, and tariffs make that even more important. We've actually had to work with legal to develop language regarding tariffs, because the uncertainty and then the way that you can justify escalation around tariffs is different than what we're used to. So definitely are going to be figuring that into these contracts.
Thank you. Do you have any more questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye, motion passes unanimously. Next, 6F, consideration of a resolution declaring the purchase of distribution transformers to be professional market conditions for purposes of RCW 39.04.280. I'll call for a motion. We have Clark available still to answer any questions regarding this resolution. Are there any questions from the public regarding the resolution? Please raise your hand. Okay, no hands up. Commissioner, do you have any questions or comments?
No question.
Okay. Call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried unanimously. Next is 6G, consideration of a resolution adopting the district's enterprise risk management ERM policy statement to establish a framework for identifying, assessing, and managing risk across the district. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay. Angela Johnson is here to answer any questions that we were thoroughly educated about this recently. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? Please raise your hand. Hands up. Commissioner, do you have any questions?
No, other than another comment. I'm so pleased to see this.
It's a lot of sense. Appreciate that we're doing this. Okay, I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Next is item 7, Commission Business. 7A, Commission Report. Any report, Commissioner?
No, other than the rain salt drip to one of our dams.
It was so impressive, the number of people who came out in the rain.
Yeah, they're all by ourselves.
Yeah, they have booked their slots ahead of time. And we had a bunch of everyone out there in a t-shirt in the pouring rain. It was just a light, normal Washington, Western Washington drizzle. It was a full-on onslaught.
Because we want that rain up there.
Yeah, I know. Except the plant was off, so we could provide tours.
That's true.
Water coming down the stream.
Yeah, I enjoyed it though. Really, those dams, the waterfalls down there are also beautiful. They really are.
I went through it and I looked at the fruit florist to see trees that John planted versus the ones that Heather and I planted.
Well, they're doing well, aren't they?
They're at farm. I actually don't know which tree is true. yeah, it's changed.
Let's put a little.
I know. On. Yeah.
I'm going to go out there in the middle of the night and mark mine.
Yeah. Those cameras, remember. All right, I don't have any reports. I mentioned the road meeting earlier. Next is 7B, our Commissioner Events Calendar. Any changes to this events calendar? We have the upcoming fuel meeting.
That's virtual, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. I find those actually pretty interesting.
I do, for the most part.
Yeah.
And I wish it's for the electives.
Right.
I wish they participate more though.
Yeah.
Be interesting to hear their observations from their, their
perspective. Yeah. It provides an opportunity to ask PPC questions.
I think
in an environment that we risk being foolish.
Oh, I never do that. Good Lord.
Okay. Next is 7C, our April 25 district dashboard. Comments or questions about the dashboard?
Check here, I don't think.
Page 165 of the packet.
Well, check mark. No, I don't have any. Is there anything that we should have?
No, actually, it's a fairly solid year. Always opportunities to continue to improve safety and work on reliability. But all in all, doing well.
Okay. We'll move on to 7D, our 2025 budget forecast and major project status report for April. Sarah Bond is here to answer any questions we might have. Any questions, Commissioner?
Give me a minute here. I don't know if this is an addition, but on project status reports, you know, sometimes we question the differences year to year. And by way of, and maybe we always have a way of example, and I don't know which page it's on. It's the one that starts with substation. But anyway, and then transmission, and the last paragraph speaks to why that difference is. That's extremely helpful, yeah, because the numbers can throw you off in terms of overspending or underspending. So,
yes, page 173.
Is it? Yeah. Okay. Well, that's something that I noted.
Major project categories in the spend.
Yeah, I'm looking more meters. No, I'm okay.
I don't have any questions. Next is item 8, our governance planning calendar. Any changes to the governance planning calendar?
One thing I was commenting to Allison, this seems to be more fleshed out in terms of when we're looking into the future. I see things that have been added, and sometimes we only see the next few meetings.
Yeah.
So I've been very pleased with that.
So next, it is now 10:41 a.m., and the board will recess into executive session to discuss the performance of a public employee. It's anticipated the executive session will last approximately 30 minutes and conclude at 11:11. The commission is not expected to take any further action following the executive session. We'll adjourn the regular meeting upon the conclusion. It is now 11:11 a.m. Our regular meeting is now adjourned.